The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. Welcome back to Columbia Calling with me, your host Richard McCall, here on the Overseas Radio Network with Escape Artist in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters close to the stars. And I'm very excited for this week's show, episode 112. Can you imagine 112 episodes? Yes, we've had a gap here and there over the past couple of years, but 112 episodes, all of which I think you'll agree are interesting in their own certain ways. And I'm, again, always flattered that we managed to get people on this show almost every week to talk about Colombia and to talk about their lives. And this week, I'm very excited to share with you that we're talking to John Paul Lancaster, who's a Briton who's been here for years. He comes and goes, but he's been here for years. As a film production crew, and he has his own company called Screen Columbia. So if you are in need of any filming here in Colombia, they've done commercial series, film sets, production, editing, etc. You name it, look up screencolombia.com. And it's unlikely that you've missed some of their shows, because their shows are everywhere, and we will reveal all about John Paul Lancaster's job with his wife, his Colombian wife, Luna. We will reveal all of what they've done here in Colombia. I mean, it's really quite phenomenal. You may not even know that you've been watching shows that have been filmed in Colombia. Can you think about a country that has been in the throes of a civil conflict becoming one of the fashionable places in which to film? I mean, that is pretty amazing. So, I mean, you reflect on these things when you think about Tom Cruise coming here and filming for, I guess it's a movie that's going to be called Mina or something like that, which will be based around the pilot who was Escobar and El Mexicano's, runner from here up to the Caribbean island, which was owned by Carlos Leder. You'll have seen all of this on that show Narcos, but anyway, Tom Cruise's film is apparently based around that. I couldn't tell you much more about it because I haven't researched it. I haven't investigated it fully. But there is such a big tax break now on people coming down to film in Colombia. It's de rigueur. And how great is that? Because it leaves hard currency. It leaves money here in the country and helps a different, a more diversified industry blossom. Of course, this is not going to be forever, but equally, we need to jump on the bandwagon and say that this is a good thing. In spite of everything that's going on in the country, in spite of everything that we feel is a little wavering and maybe wobbling with the peace dialogues and with Venezuela and between Maduro and Santos, there are positive news. There are positive reports coming out, and perhaps some things that we don't think about. Think about filming. Think about the industry, what's required, the techniques required, the amount of people required. So we're going to be talking to John Paul about all of this, and that's the show. That's episode 112, and I think you'll find that it's absolutely incredible. In fact, I know I'm going to be overwhelmed, because it's just something about which I really know very little indeed. And so I'm going to leave you right now. We're going to come back after this short break with John Paul Lancaster, and we're going to be talking about Screen Columbia, screencolombia.com. Of course, I love hearing from you. Get in touch. That's columbiacalling@gmail.com. columbiacallingradio.com is our website. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter @Columbia Calling. And yes, I've got another great interview for next week in the pipeline. It will be with someone from Save the Children and their work on the Pacific Coast. So, you know, things are falling into place again for Columbia Calling, and I'm glad that you've stuck with us through all of this time. Episode 112 coming up. Don't go away. Thank you very much. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're here in Bogota, Colombia. It's raining outside, it's grey, the day has spoiled, but I'm very happy to be here with John Paul Lancaster, who is a filmmaker, ScreenColombia.com, check it out, he's done all sorts of great things. So we're going to be talking about Colombia and filmmaking and the region and other things that he's worked on. So welcome on Columbia Calling, John.
Nice to meet you, Richard, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, did I say John or John Paul?
John Paul.
John Paul, so yeah. There we go, formal here, John Paul, ScreenColombia.com. How is it that you came to be here in Colombia and have, you know, this production company?
Well, like a lot of people here, especially men, through my wife, who's Colombian Luna, we met in the UK at a film school, and then came here on holiday. And while we were here, we ended up getting work. She'd been a first AD in the past, and while we were here, a company she'd worked with, doing a program called Killing Pablo about for Situation Critical. It was about his life here. She'd worked on that, and that company got in touch with her about doing a program here called Locked Up Abroad, or Banged Up Abroad as it's known in the UK. And they wanted us to set up a production company, and I said, let's do it.
Kind of fell on your ass, but it was great.
Yeah, landed on our feet, yeah, rather than our ass.
But I like it. But hang on, this Killing Pablo one, was it based on the Mark Bowden book, the Killing Pablo book, or was it just a different...
I'm not sure, because I wasn't involved in it, but yeah, I mean, probably Leon would know more than that.
Well, we won't talk more about that, but so Banged Up Abroad, Locked Up Abroad, I mean, we've all seen it, everybody out there has seen it, because it's... You know, when my son is old enough, I will put him through it so that he knows not to get involved in any of these illicit industries. But you've recorded, I mean, I don't even know how many there are in the series. It's been running for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they've probably done about 120 of those shows. And we did about 7 or 8 here in Colombia.
Yeah.
Not just all Colombian stories. We did like a variety of shows. So... We started off doing a Columbia show, which was about a girl called Vivian from New York who was involved in drug smuggling. But then we did a load of other different shows. You know, we did the Real Snakes on the Plane, which was about a US guy smuggling snakes and exotic animals in the 70s, which we sort of cheated for Thailand and some other places in Central America and the States. And then we did another show that was based in Colombia about some backpackers that got kidnapped from Ciudad Perdida back in I think that was like in the early 90s, or was it? Yeah,
something like that. 2002, 2000, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe about 12 or 15 years ago. Yeah. They were kidnapped while they were backpacking. Of course, it's a lot safer now, especially around that area. But we did that story, and then yeah, there's been a variety of sort of. Cautionary tales, they like to call them, and yeah, we filmed a lot, not just in Colombia, but like other countries. And I mean, the great thing about filming here is that, you know, you can cheat lots of other places here. So I mean, as a lot of people who will be listening to this podcast know, Colombia's just got like an amazing amount of different locations and like environments and weather and little microclimates, so there's a great variety.
I think it's great. I think it's fantastic that that there is this opportunity to record here and to film here in all sorts of situations. But is all that you're doing cautionary tales? I mean, kidnapped with the Ciudad Perdido, the Lost City. And I mean, that was a pretty
high profile story when it came out, I remember, because there was the one kid who was a London boy who jumped off the trail into a river and then wandered for like 6 days before he was found by like a farmer. And then there was the other guy, I can't remember his name, Mark. Who's done a documentary of My Kidnapper. And stuff. Yeah. You know, it was different. And of course, there were a bunch of Israelis who were caught with them. Yeah. Too. Now, one of the people, all those years ago that I did the Lost City Trek with, it's known for having a bunch of Israelis on it as well. I had some 6 or 7 Israelis in my hiking group. One of them had been through the conscription, military service in Israel with Benny.
Oh, yeah.
His name was Benny, was one of the ones who kidnapped him, and the guerrillas actually referred to him as Benny Problemas.
Yeah.
Because he was so difficult. Yeah. Everything they said, he'd do the opposite.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I mean, that's what I guess the Israeli army is taught as well, if you were taken into captivity. I don't know. But it must have been fascinating to get in and film this. And did you have testimonies from any of the guerrillas who'd taken them, or
no? But weirdly enough, I mean, the way that show works is the UK based crew, like go and interview the participants, the people who were really kidnapped, or the people who were involved in whatever activity it was. So we never actually meet them. Like, we get the transcript of their stories, and then obviously we do all the drama reconstruction. But I remember Benny as one of our parts, yeah. And I mean, their story, was pretty difficult. But I actually met Mark, the British guy who did My Kidnapper in Sheffield at a documentary film festival. And I was speaking to him, and one of the big parts of his film is that the kidnappers actually got in touch with him.
Through Facebook?
Yeah, I think it was through Facebook, and I think they were getting married. I think there was a male and female kidnappers who were getting married and invited him to the wedding. And then there was this big debate about whether he was going to go. And then I think that's sort of like what sparked the idea of making the film, that they were going to go back and sort of retrace their steps. And the other like main part in his film, and one of the main characters in the Locked Up Abroad story, was the German girl who was, I think she was the only female in the group who was kidnapped with them. I think it was maybe 7 of them in total. Mm. And she made the unfortunate mistake of right at the end, before they were being released, of having a photograph taken with, I think it was the ELN.
Yeah.
I've heard her testimony, and she said, like, you know, they were taking his photograph, and the guys were there, and obviously she said she'd been with them a long time, and they had their flag there, and basically they gave her a gun to pose with, and obviously when this got out into the press, it had a really negative effect on the way people perceived of her as being kidnapped. And I think in the end, after she'd been repatriated back to Germany, the German government took her to court and demanded the money back. I think she's still paying it back.
Lifelong debt to the German government. Yeah. I do believe that. Yeah, I remember all of these stories coming out.
Yeah.
It's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, if I were standing with a bunch of guerrillas and they told me to hold a gun and pose for a photo, believe you me, I would hold the gun and pose for a photo.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the truth of it.
And there's all sorts of weird cycle. You know, there's the Stockholm syndrome that people were talking about, and you know, it's a difficult situation. You know, and I'm sure, like, if you asked her, like, oh, was that a situation she would have wanted to have been in, she would have said no.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't choose to be kidnapped, so it's a bit unfortunate. And then, so yeah, I mean, that was, during that, we didn't actually film it in Ciudad Perdida for that. We sort of cheated it in different places of Colombia. But we did go there on another show, which was for the BBC, which was called Lost Kingdoms. Lost Civilizations of South America.
Yes.
Obviously, when we're on a tight filming deadline, we couldn't do the trek up there, so we got flown up by the military. Yeah, and it was super complex because obviously that land is Kogi land.
Yeah.
So we had to get permission from the Kogi. But because we were sort of exploring, we were looking at the Muisca from the Bogota region and from around Lake Guatavita. Yeah. And also looking at the Tayrona as well. Mm. So when we were up there, with the Kogi, they were obviously keen to support the filming because it looked at their ancestors. So it was great, but we had to go up there with a mammal, who flew up there with us.
How did you find that?
Yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, like, I've got some amazing photos of the mammal looking out of the helicopter window, you know, just, and all the time I was thinking, I wonder if he's thinking this is just like my dreams, you know, you know, and
yeah,
hey, or whatever. Yeah, and you know, because, you know, and just like his visions of what it would be like, and obviously being able to see all their land as well, you know, because I mean, from a helicopter you get to see the whole Sierra and. You know, and you know, it must have been. I mean, it was an amazing experience for me, and I'm sure it was for them. And they were. I mean, you know, they were really accommodating to us, and they don't film with anybody. No. They're you know, I mean, it was really interesting going to see the head, you know, the political leader, because he said to us. He was very aware of making the Kogi like a sideshow, a circus sideshow, and that's not something that they were interested in. They're only interested in spreading their message of, like, you know, looking after Mother Earth, and you know. So, you know, if it's something to do with their message or their ancestry, you know, they're really interested in it.
It's really important, though. You've basically taken this and said about the cultural sensitivities. And here in Colombia, there's a lot. Not only when we talk about, let's say, the Kogi or the Muisca, the indigenous pre-Colombian people, you know, but also when we talk about Pablo Escobar and other things, there is a sensitivity here, and it must be taken into account. And I think to sort of. You know, it's very interesting, and of course, you know, you're a foreigner, I'm a foreigner, we're both married to Colombians, perhaps these are things that don't impact us straight away, and then later we end up going, oh, hang on a second, you know, we are still guests here.
I think it's really strange. I mean, when I first came to Colombia, you know, people are very, very nervous about speaking about kidnapping, drugs, cocaine, corruption. And you know, and as a foreigner, you're sort of like, these are some of the things that you first hear about Colombia, and you're quite open to speaking about it.
Yeah.
Now, having lived here for 5 years, I don't like speaking about those subjects to like my friends back in England or foreigners, because I'm very conscious that it's painting a very one-dimensional picture of Colombia. Yeah, it's part of the history, and yeah, these things happen here, but they happen in, you know. People get murdered in New York, and, like, you know, there's corruption in the UK. It's like when we were just speaking about the kidnapping in Ciudad Perdida, I was like, is this something that I really want to be speaking about, you know, on this podcast? Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, it's something that we did, but I don't want to paint this picture of Colombia as like, this is just it. But at the same time, I don't think you can shy away from those issues and say, this never existed. So it's sort of like, getting the fine balance of what the country's about, you know, and that you know.
It's a tough one because, you know, I find myself, I end up having to write lots of negative pieces.
Yeah.
I mean, they are overwhelmingly negative, you know.
Yeah.
Eight soldiers poisoned, or the peace dialogues, or something. But then I'll write the guidebook, and there'll be a lot of fluff in there and stuff about wonderful beaches, and so I sort of balance it out. You know, it's like, I can't not write about the bad stuff. Like, I can't not do the story in the Ciudad Perdida, because it did happen.
Yeah.
It is safer today. It is fine, you know, these things. it's just an unfortunate reality, but I do get sensitive to it as well after a while, and particularly when you're in England and perhaps talking to someone who doesn't know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, great cocaine. And, excuse me, please, you know, wind that down. You know, this is a real situation. These are real people in a wonderful country. You know, and, so it's a tough one. But we're going to take a really short break right now. We've tapped into a rich vein of conversation, but we will take a short break, have some commercials, and be right back with John Paul Lancaster talking about Screen Columbia, screencolumbia.com if you want to employ him, and the production company, and working here in Columbia. Thank you for listening. Don't go away. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, talking to John Paul Lancaster of ScreenColumbia.com, production company based here in Bogota, but works all over the world. Very, pretty impressive CV of filming. We were just talking about sort of locked up abroad, or banged up abroad, as it's known in the UK. And we've touched on to quite a personal note about this and how sensitive he and I will get about talking about always about kidnapping or murders or the drugs trade here in Colombia, because you know we live here now. It's a different story. While I will never be Colombian, this is the truth. You know, I'm always going to be seen as a foreigner. I do live here, and in 9 years of assimilating a culture, you start to become sensitive to it as well. You know, what would upset my wife would upset me. It's just one of those things about living somewhere and immersing yourself. So I think that was a very interesting point to end on in that last segment of the show. But I know that you'd be doing other shows, but before we go into them, there's this new Netflix show that's out there that everybody's talking about, and I feel obliged to watch, because otherwise I won't know what people are talking about. In particular, friends of mine emailing, what do you think of this show? Is it Narco or Narcos?
Narcos, yeah.
Narcos. So the whole... Now, I have watched 3 episodes so far, and I know that the Pablo Escobar figure is Brazilian.
Yeah.
He's got a ridiculous accent. Yeah. There are a few Colombians in there, and then there's your generic Mexican who's in every movie as a Mexican.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I try and see this as burying the past now, okay, because it's hit the mainstream. Perhaps it's now, I don't know, maybe it now comes into folklore more than reality. I don't know. I don't know how to come to terms with it, because people have asked my opinion, and I don't hate it.
Yeah.
I do hate the narration. Yeah. It really bugs me, the narration. I think it might be Matt Dillon who's doing the narration or whatever, but there's just this voiceover all the time. But I find it a tough one to watch as well at times. I'm going to have to watch. I'm going to force myself through the series. But I don't. You didn't work on it, did you? Or are you going to get me in trouble now?
No, I didn't. I didn't work on it. But I've watched. I'm probably about halfway through it. Yeah. I mean, I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, I first read the book Killing Pablo.
Yeah.
Which is like a really, really interesting book.
It's a very good
Yeah.
book. Same guy wrote Black Hawk
Down. Yeah, Black Hawk Down, yeah. And, you know, I really enjoyed the book. I thought it was a real insight into that period in Colombian history. But, like, I don't know, Narcos, I mean, it's entertaining, it's good. I mean, from a watcher's point of view, you know, it's entertaining. I like it. It concerns me again that it's painting a one-dimensional picture of Colombia. I'm all from a filmmaker's point of view. I think it's great for Colombia because it's a massive Netflix production that came to Colombia that was filmed here. They used a lot of local crew. It came in under the new film law here, which one of the main purposes is to change the image of Colombia, because they're trying to bring a lot of films here to film under the new law, which is really great because there's a lot of. Cash incentives to film here now. When we've got like amazing crews, locations, and rental houses here, so there's a really good industry for it. So I have mixed feelings about how that law, and I know the intentions of it was to sort of change the international image of Colombia, about if it's just going to attract more films about Pablo and drug taking. So I mean, It's good. I you know, it's entertaining. I like it. It's not as good as some other Netflix stuff.
Yeah.
But I think probably overall, it's good for the film industry here, and not great for the image of Colombia. But then, you know, you have to balance that with some of the other films that are being filmed here at the moment, like the Tom Cruise film.
What is that one he's doing? Because I know he's been trying to recreate Hacienda Napolis, or Escobar's farm, but up by Monteria.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know too much about it.
It'll be
an
Escobar film. I mean,
yeah,
surely.
It's another Escobar film.
Yeah,
right?
I think so.
Oh, is it?
I think so, because if he's doing Hacienda Napolis.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, well, there you go then. Yeah. I have mixed things about that. I mean, talking from a point of view from our company, I mean, when we first started, yeah, we were getting a lot of, you know, we did a lot of the locked up abroads,
yeah.
and then we were getting like a lot of drug inquiries. But, you know, people want, you know, we did what to do Drugs Inc. here and things like that. But then over time, I've seen like stories changing. We've done some like travel shows recently. You know, I mean, Colombia is definitely like really opening up in terms of tourism here.
Yeah.
You know, so we've been doing a lot of that. People wanting to do travel shows, yeah. Not just about like, not just about Colombia and, you know, but sort of traveling through South America, exploring the people, exploring some of the histories. You know, so there's a wide mixture of films. Of documentaries that are emerging and films, and then now, I mean, we're seeing it open up as a film location. I mean, I know we spoke about the Tom Cruise and the Narcos ones, but there's been a number of other films that have been filmed here. I know the I think it was called, I think, is it called 13, about the miners?
Yeah, with Antonio Banderas.
With Antonio Banderas, that was filmed here. Yeah,
oh, I did not know
under
that.
The new law. Yeah, so there are other films that are not about that aspect of Colombian culture that are being filmed here now, and we're seeing it ourselves. We've filmed like shows that could be filmed anywhere in the world, but people have decided to film here. Like, for example, like we've done three or four episodes of Naked and Afraid here.
Now, Naked Afraid, for those people who don't know, is that one where the two strangers are put together and made, you know, put together naked, and they have to sort of survive for 28 days or something like that?
It's 21 days. Yeah. So, I mean, the premise of the show is it's two people that don't know each other, a man and a woman.
And we always hope that they hate one another because it makes for better viewing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part of the show. I mean, it's survival meets Big Brother. Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, it's the second highest rated show on Discovery in the US, you know. So, I mean, it's a really popular show. But, I mean, so they meet naked, and they basically have to survive for 21 days in an extreme environment.
They are extreme environments. There was one where there was so much water. I don't know if that was filmed in Colombia, but I can't remember. It's just, it was all the time in the water. They had to actually build stilts to sleep on. Was that here in Colombia?
No, that wasn't here in Colombia.
That was, you know, most of them I'm all right with, because, you know, I've got a background from adventure and stuff. I was like, I could do most of these things. But that one where the water would rise every night, good God, there was just no dry land. There's no way of making a fire either. So anyway, I digress. But tell me something quickly about this new law. Does that new law to encourage filming here, is that kind of like what Morocco did all those years ago? So every desert scene or every gladiator scene was, you know, they built fake towns in Morocco just for sets and stuff.
Yeah.
Is that essentially what Colombia's doing?
Yeah, it's essentially what they're doing. I mean, basically... you've got to have a minimum spend of around $500,000 locally.
Yeah.
And then from that you get between like 30 to 40% of your local spend back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a really attractive incentive. And, you know, it's bringing some big players here, and it's bringing some big productions here. You know, and that is having a knock-on effect. Like I said to you, a programme like Naked and Afraid could go anywhere in the world, you know, and they're deciding that, like, oh, we'll go and we'll come to Colombia, you know, and basically invest in the country because they know it's got great locations. good filming crews, equipment houses, and more importantly, I think like it's becoming safer and safer here now.
You know? You've done what, up to five?
We've done five here now. Yeah, we did a big series earlier this year called Naked and Afraid XL, which is like a spin-off of the main series, and it was like, I think it's like between 8 and 12 episodes, and that was for 40 days.
Wow.
And it was, we filmed that in Vichada.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, and in an amazing reserve up there. Really, really varied landscapes. I mean, it's right on the edge of Los Llanos.
Yeah.
It has the Orinoco going by the side of it. The people up there were amazing. And the reserve was spectacular as well. So,
incredible.
Yeah, I mean, that's just aired in the US and it's just airing in the UK now. And that was, you know, that was a big production. Probably a crew of like 40 or 50 from the US and maybe like 20 or 30 from Colombia.
So we're looking at 60 odd people out there in Vichada.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot. There aren't flights that fit 60 people out to Puerto Carreño out that way.
No, it was in Puerto Carreño. Yeah, we hired chartered a plane there.
Of course
there.
You did.
I mean, you can get a flight there, but you're pretty much like booking all the seats. Yeah, so it worked out cheaper for us to charter one.
That's a good expedition, that one. And I imagine a lot of the Colombians that came with you had never been out there either.
No. Oh, I mean, like a lot of people like, I've never been to Puerto Carreño, and like it's, and Puerto Carreño is actually the capital of Vichada, and it's, you know, it's relatively small, you know.
I imagine dirt streets. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, not all of them. They had tarmac streets, but there's a couple of dirt streets, and the people there were like really welcoming, like everywhere in Colombia. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about all the great facilities it has for filmmaking here, but I think probably the biggest attribute Colombia has is the people.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I'm sure you feel the same way yourself. People are just like really interested in what you're doing, you know, especially if you're doing something internationally, they're like really welcoming and like, oh, you know, what's this about? And if they can help you. And I mean, just getting into, you know, we filmed at Barranquilla Airport, Airside, and you know, you wouldn't be able to do that at London Heathrow or even Manchester Airport without paying like, you know, tens of thousands of pounds, and you know the costs here and just the flexibility and how people are with you, you know, it's just like amazing. People just want Colombia to be portrayed well and to be involved as well on the world stage and be, you know, and to be recognised.
And so you had this, I mean, I'm just trying to think of the people. Are you taking all of these Americans out to Puerto Carreño?
Not all of them. Okay. Yeah, probably about 40 or 50 guys from the US.
But the cast were...
I think there were 11 US and an Australian.
I just taking them out to Puerto Carreño, I just think it would have been amazing to see their reactions.
Yeah, yeah.
And then... did anyone drop out?
Well, you'll have to watch the show, I'm afraid.
Oh, no, I don't know if I can go through all that many episodes.
Well, maybe you should just watch the end.
I'm going to have to look on a cheat sheet online somewhere and find out. So it sounds really, and forgive me the phrase, but you're like a gun for hire for filming in Colombia. I mean, this is it, isn't
Yeah, there? That's pretty much it. I mean, people come to us with, they tend to be either a Colombian story that has to be filmed here. Like we were talking before we went on air about the woman raised by monkeys, who was a lady called Marina Chapman, who was kidnapped or taken when she was like 4 or 5, and then basically was left in the jungle by whoever took her, and then lived with some capuchin monkeys for a period of time before she was found by some hunters.
Yeah.
Amazing story. She eventually ended up in Bradford in the UK, and she's happily married now, but her story is like, you know, truly unique. And so, you know, you get stories like that, and you, when we're dealing with something like that, you get this like intense like period where suddenly you become surrounded by experts on capuchin monkeys and psychologists, and you're learning all this new stuff that you never knew about. And so doing the work we do, we get like these like brief brief moments of, like, you know, of somebody else's life, you know, and that's super interesting. And so we get specific stories like that. And then, you know, we get like the reality TV shows like Naked and Afraid. We've just filmed a couple of adverts, one for a coffee company, which was amazing as well, because I got to learn about the whole coffee making process,
which is incredible, really.
Yeah,
what it all goes through. I mean,
and it's great, and meeting the farmers as well. So and that was with a guy from the UK, Jimmy Doherty, who's like Jamie Oliver's best friend. They do the Jamie and Jimmy's Friday Night Feast. You've probably never seen it.
But
he was a really nice guy, and basically he's a farmer as well. So it was about following the farming process, him meeting up with a coffee farmer here. And basically it was all real. Yeah. We you know, I thought, oh, it's going to be like, they're going to like want to cast a coffee farmer. And like, you know, we went to interview all these coffee farmers, and I thought, oh, they're going to pick this good looking family, you know, and they picked like this real down to earth guy, lovely family, a guy called Hector. Made his own roasting machine out of like a gas cylinder and a bicycle wheel that roasted his beans, and it was you know, and it was like a really great experience. And the advert, I'm sure, is going to be amazing. And then we just shot another one for FedEx that's going to be in the Amazon and in Villa de Leyva. And again, you know, it was really amazing experience.
We've got about 10 minutes left, and I'm going to wind back a bit, because I'm not going to let you get away with not talking about this Marina Chapman a bit, because it's, I mean, I can already tell you that some of my listeners are going, what? You know, apparently the story was serialised in the Daily Mail, is that right?
Yeah, she wrote a book as well. I think the book's called Woman Raised by Monkeys. It could be Girl Raised by Monkeys. And the film we did was like a feature-length film, and so, I mean, yeah, her story, she was taken at a very early age, and this was like she's 60 now, this was probably in the 50s, she's not sure how old she was when she was taken, and apparently during that period of time there was a lot of displacement in Colombia, and it wasn't uncommon for families to be split up, people, you know, being taken or disappearing, and a lot of movement, and so she ended up being in the jungle, and then she's not quite sure what period of time she lived there. It could be anywhere from like 6 months to like 3 or 4 years, but at some point she met this group of capuchin monkeys who sort of helped us to survive, and who she became part of their group, and was her main source of sort of contact. And she lived like that for quite a period before some hunters found her and then took her to Cúcuta, where we filmed as well. And then, unfortunately, sold her into a bordello, into a brothel, but not to work as a prostitute, but just to work in there. I think she sort of cleaned up and stuff like that, but it was a very abusive atmosphere for the woman who ran it. Was really, really, really abusive to Marina. You know, physically and mentally abused her, and eventually she was taken by the family who lived next door. The first time that happened, the woman from the bordello phoned the police, and they took her back.
Really?
Yeah. And then the family took her again, and then they moved away. I mean, she had an awful. She used to be chained to a tree in the back garden, and you know, she was threatened with knives and stuff. And anyway, she was taken to Bogota, and the family sort of adopted her. I mean, I think back then, you know, that it was sort of like, you know, adopted in inverted commas.
Common law adoption.
And she had she was in a loving and kind environment with his family. That family moved to the UK in the 80s. But before they moved, they put an advert into the newspaper saying, did anybody know about this missing girl and this had been a life? And apparently a man came forward. I think he might have approached Marina just on the street and said, you really look like my wife. And she just couldn't. She was too young and she'd been through too much emotional stress and she just couldn't deal with it and she couldn't accept it. And she's upset about it now. Because it could have been, her father, and but she couldn't accept it, and she left. So, part of the story was about retracing Marina's life and seeing if we could discover her parents. We did a little article in the newspapers, on some local radios in Bogota. People got in touch. We did some DNA tests of likely candidates, but it didn't turn out positive. I mean, mainly because I think there were quite a few similar scenarios that had happened to other people during that time. And then the other part of the film was to substantiate Marina's claims that whether she'd actually been raised by monkeys or not. So there was a lot of scientific research. Looking at her bones, how they developed, speaking to psychologists, with specialists in monkey behaviour and how much she knew about the behaviour and whether she could recognise certain facts that only specialists in Capuchin monkeys would know. So, you know, it was a really interesting story. And I think, like, to watch it, you'll probably draw your own conclusions whether you think Marina's story is true or not. For myself, when I first met her, when I just read about it, I thought, no way, you know, this just can't be true, you know. Yeah, I mean, maybe she believes it. And the director actually said that to me at the airport when he came. He said, what do you think? And I said, no way. And he said, tell me what you think at the end of the film. And by the end of the film, I changed my mind.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's kind of like, it's like a cruel, unruly and kind of bastardization of the Tarzan story a little bit. It's horrible. I mean, you know, just to think of what she went through. And even now, she's living in Bradford. If I've got any listeners in Bradford, you know, forgive me, but it's the curry capital of the UK. So from Cucuta in Norte de Santander, on the border with Venezuela, to the curry capital of the UK, it's just a little bit odd, you know. It's not a route you would think of, you know. Yeah. It's like a Bogota, same country.
Bradford. No, I mean, it's a crazy story.
She's married
story.
To a Brit and has English children.
She has. I think two daughters, one of whom came on the trip with her, Vanessa. They're really nice. Yeah, I mean, and Marina's like a really lovely person. You know,
it's amazing. It's just fascinating. I did not know about the story. I will start looking it up on Amazon now, and I'm going to probably end up buying the book to read it. But I mean, fascinating stuff. And so you've got lots of projects in the pipeline ahead of you. I know that you're busy and stuff, but will we see you filming as we wind down this interview? Will you be filming more this year or next year in Colombia? Have you got other things?
We've got some other reality TV shows that we'll be filming in Colombia. A couple of stories I'm not allowed to say at the moment. I mean, definitely Colombia is like flavour of the month. I mean, it's our company's grown and grown now. We're pretty much like continuously working, either in like TV or commercials. Our next step would be to sort of like get into the feature films now and take advantage of the new law, which is just making it such a hot spot and really drawing attention to Colombia. I mean, all producers that I sort of, you know, I'm involved in a couple of different networks worldwide, and I'm constantly getting feedback that Colombia's like really getting good acknowledgement and is definitely somewhere that people are looking at coming to film here now, you know, just just because it just does have a lot to offer, you know.
Well, there you have it. You've got the, you know, right from the horse's mouth. I mean, Colombia is, you know, the order of the day, and it's a really good news story then, you know, for this kind of industry to be looking at our country as the destination for this kind of filming and for this kind of, let's say, it's an economic boom, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
For Colombia. So, well, listen, if you want to get in touch with John Paul Lancaster, you've heard of what he's worked in, you've heard, you know, there's quite some resume, as we said, his CV is very impressive. That's screencolombia.com. You can get in touch with him through there, through the website, you can see the portfolio and everything. Just take this moment to say thank you for sharing all of these stories and anecdotes and a little bit about the country. It really comes across how much you love it here. So again, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks, Richard. Very kind.
You're most welcome. Of course, if you've enjoyed the show, if you wanted to let me know anything, want to get in touch, that's columbiacalling@gmail.com. Our website's columbiacallingradio.com. And of course, we're on Twitter and Facebook, where you can find everything else. We'll be posting everything up there regarding this show. So thank you for listening. I'm Richard McCall, signing off for Columbia Calling.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.